Buckle up, you beauties, because we're about to dive deep into the world of all things hockey.
Pigeon!
A greasy pigeon isn't just any old bird. It's a message. It's letting the other guy know exactly where they stand. And it is not meant to be friendly.
You guys are sensitive over there.
And now, from the Pigeon's Nest, your hosts, Jeff Sullivan and Kevin Trussler. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Greasy Pigeon Podcast. I am your host, Jeff Sullivan, and with me, as always, there he is, the beauty of a guy, Kevin Trussler. Kevin, Happy New Year. Say hello to the people.
Happy New Year to you, my friend, and to everyone listening. I hope the holidays treated everyone well. I know it treated me well. I'm definitely a few LBs over what I was beforehand, which is not good. My doctor will get after me in about a month when he wanted to re-see me, you know. Happy New Year, all. Let's do this.
Sugar, salt, and a little bit of exercise, Kevin.
I guess. They tell me that's the last one that it seems to not fit into my schedule.
Of one out of three of those, you get to choose which one you should be partaking more of in. And hint, hint, it's not the sugar like you want it to be, unfortunately.
No. How about the salt? How about, you know, chicken wings now? No.
Yeah, exactly. Extra. As long as it's in the sauce, baby. Speaking of sauce, we are post the new year, turn of the calendar. There's been a lot of good hockey across the board in a bunch of different leagues. And I want to touch on kind of three different topics today throughout the show, Kev. We're going old school. It's just you and I today. Recapping, kind of setting off 2025, where we stand now and kind of what's to come. I want to start with a little bit of just NHL catch up. It's been a while since we've talked to NHL hockey. We focus a lot on juniors. We focus a lot on the lower level hockey, right? The development and the mindset and all that recently. So I want to definitely get into some NHL recap. I do want to touch on World Juniors. You're wearing the hat. You know, hell of a W for USA hockey. Great tournament, I thought, over Christmas break. Wonderful hockey yet again. A little bit of controversy, right? And we'll get into that shortly. And I do want to touch on the Tampa Showcase and the USPHL Premier and Elite Divisions that took place in Wesley Chapel over the first weekend of January. A lot of good hockey there. Some surprises, some eye-opening results and records from that weekend. So we'll unpack some of that as we go, Kev, also. But as I mentioned, NHL season underway. Let's start with just the mess of playoff standings in the Eastern Division. Kev, you and I were talking about it just prior to the show coming on. I mean, the Bruins are hopscotching the Lightning game over game. The Lightning have a bunch of games in hand, Kev, six games in hand. So clearly they're sitting on a bunch of points, which is most likely going to knock the Bruins into the wild card hunt. The Metropolitan Division, stud teams. I mean, 59 points, 54 points, 54 points for Carolina, New Jersey, Washington. Washington in first place, Carolina, New Jersey. But the wild card, 1 through 10, 46 points for the Lightning, 37 points for Buffalo, 9-point spread across every team in the East. I would venture to say the East is wide open right now.
Yeah, and definitely some head scratchers there, right? Specifically with the Metropolitan, like, you know, the Blue Shirts. Who would have thought that they would be where they're at right now? You know, under 500, sitting at 40 points. I would have thought that they would have been at the top of the table, specifically with, you know, some of the veteran guys that they have over there. Interesting move, trading your captain, you know, about a month ago. I think that that was a real eye opener, but you know, it's good to see some fresher, newer teams at the top of the bracket there. Being a Bruin fan, I think the biggest thing that our challenge is we've played the most games. So, you know, talking about the Lightning, six games, that's 12 points. You know, you're only a point behind that. They go on a run, win all of those. You know, we're falling down the table and we could be outside looking in. Columbus is another one that is, they're scratching for a wild card. I think they're playing with heavy hearts. Obviously, Gaudreau was supposed to be on the squad, and I'm sure that that's been a little bit. They're playing with that on their mind. But you know, it's interesting. I always say, ever since the Blues beat our Bruins and they're at the bottom of the barrel, January 1, you know, if you are close and within striking distance, and I think that's anywhere from 10, 12 points out, you go on a heater. Anything can happen.
Yeah, and I'm and looking at the numbers a little deeper, Kev, as you're breaking it down, just goes to show, you know, not to focus hyper focus on the Bruins. Yes, that's our team, but I am not here to sing their praises. They are, when this all evens out, they're most likely on the outside. Like, just they don't have the most games played in just the Atlantic Division. They have the most games played in the Eastern Conference. And if you look at their 47 points for where they are, If Columbus wins their games in hand, they jump them. If Montreal wins their games in hand, they jump the Bruins. If Detroit wins their, like, so on, and if Ottawa does, like, literally all the way down the line, they jump the Bruins. Just if, you know, if the Bruins take a week off, right, and don't play any games and everyone else catches up, the Bruins are probably down in, you know, fifth or sixth in the wild card rankings when everything evens out. And you know what plays that out even more? Goal differential, right? Stats are stats. But Toronto leads the division with 14 plus 14 goal differential. Washington leads their division with plus 40 goal differential. 4-0. Huge number. Tampa Bay. Yep. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, the Bolts, right? That's, I was just going to say, you know, plus 36.
And what are the Bruins, Kev? Break it down.
It's a solid minus 26 right there.
Minus, which puts them, let's look at the red, down in the lower, oh, I don't know, tied for the worst goal differential in the Eastern Conference.
You're only trailing Nashville and San Jose.
In the entire league.
And it, yeah, it's pretty gross. It's pretty gross for a team that, you know, and prides
Chicago,
themselves. Yeah,
so not to correct you, but Chicago also, 35, minus 35.
Minus 30, okay, yep.
So you're tied for fourth worst goal differential in all of the NHL. And those other three teams are not in the playoff mix in the West, by the way.
Yeah, no, they'll be fighting for the ping pong balls at the end of the year. But for a team that prides themselves on defense first and, you know, playing that 200-foot game, to have that big of a difference, we've always said that's been the Bruins' challenge over the years is secondary scoring, right? If Pasta wasn't doing it, or Marchand or Bergeron, you really needed someone else to step up. And, you know, there were years there when they did have those guys. And, you know, unfortunately, that's not happening this year. And, you know, let's talk about goaltending as well. You know, Swayman can't do it all. I know he held out, and that's a management flub at the beginning of the year. But, you know, having a 1A and a 1B where someone can step in and steal a game here and there, that's just not happening. So, you know, who knows? Still half the season or just under half the season for these guys left. Lots of hockey to still be played, and hopefully they don't go on a 10-game slide like the good old Buffalo Sabres did. But Buffalo's bouncing back. Sorry, brother.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Sorry, Chris. But no, you know, and I look at what the Bruins are, and I think that even if they stay on the current path, Kev, I mean, they're going to be wild card two, maybe, if they can get there, right? Like, but most likely they're going to be on the outside looking in when this is over, and I don't think they'll be in ping pong territory, but I guess if you're on the outside of the playoffs, everyone's in ping pong territory at that point, right? So
sure,
you are in the lottery if you don't make the playoffs, and just based on where they are with goal differential right now, they could easily fall down into ping pong territory. But here's my fear, and I want to get into what happens in February, right? And I don't have the trade deadline in front of me, Kev, but it's usually in the February timeframe, if I recall correctly. I don't want the Bruins to be buyers. I don't want them to sit there and think that they have something with this squad and mortgage the future again for the likes of the Taylor Hall experiment and whatever else of the world, right? Tyler Bertuzzi. Yeah, great. You did awesome. We didn't win the cup that year, and we gave how many first rounders for you? And you and Tyler Bertuzzi keeps bouncing around the league, you know, team after team. Like, I almost want to be a seller, and not to the point of selling your future. But let me ask you this, Kev. I'm going to throw a name out there for you, and I got all the stats to back it up, but I want your raw opinion. Pavel Zacha.
I want to love him. You know what I mean? And you and I have talked about this offline. I mean, I really do. Consistency. consistency. That's the thing with him in my mind. It's just like he shows flashes where he can be that, you know, number one or number two line center. But then it's just there's other times it's like, you know, he's invisible. Like it's great third, fourth, you know, great third line. But is he the guy on your top two to get it done? I don't see it, you know. And
well, and to your point, consistency. So he's been a Boston Bruin since 2022. 21 goals, 36 assists for 57 points in 82 games year one. 21 goals, same number. 38 assists, basically the same number. 59 points in year two. That was last season. This year, 9 goals, 12 assists and for 21 points. He is well under his averages this point in the season, you know, roughly halfway through games played. His numbers in New Jersey were never that good. He's playing better hockey, arguably, the 2 years prior to this than he's ever played in his career. The Bruins can't score. I mean, I'm looking at their total goal scoring numbers. Pasternak's only at 7. The Bruins don't have a 20-goal scorer 44 games in.
They only have 4 guys in double digits.
Correct. And who's and your fifth guy? Pavel Zacha with 9, tied with Morgan Geeky, right? And I've got Zacha's numbers in front of me. He's making $4.75 million. Give us 9 goals to give us the same number of goals as Morgan Geeky. And I will get Morgan Geeky's numbers here real quick, but I am guessing that they are not $4.75 million.
Well, and that's the other thing, right? They're up against the cap. We've talked about the front office. I mean, they have struck out in so many ways. You look at their drafting, it's not been good. You know, you look at how they handle the goaltending situation. You know, you don't ever give a player the upper hand if you don't have them signed already. What do you think's going to happen? You know, I mean, that's sales 101. You know, I know that everyone's on the same team, air quote, so to speak, but you know, you got to make sure these guys are locked up before you get rid of others. So I don't know, you know, there's talk about, you know, possibly JT Miller get coming again. If you can make it work with the cap, fantastic. But I'm like you, I don't see this team contending for a cup. If you make it into the playoffs, it could be, you know, more than likely one and done. You know, unless they catch lightning in a bottle, but I don't see it with this team. It's, you know, it's a different Bruin team than what we've seen in the past.
Yeah. And just to close my thought, Morgan Geeky is making $2 million a year, which in today's day and age is closer to your third line winger, which I believe that's where he plays most nights, you know, for your 9 goals halfway through. That's, you know, 18 goal pace plus or minus. That's what you expect from $2 million, not almost 5. And to your point about the numbers, the Bruins have $500,000 of cap space as of right now. $500,000. That's it. So they're not bringing in anybody big unless they get rid of somebody. I'm looking at their projected draft capital moving forward. They have a first in 2025, no second, a third, no fourth, and then the late rounds. And then they have a first, second, third next year, and then a first, second, no third the year after. So they've already leveraged the future 3 years from now on a third round draft pick, right? So again, what are you getting in the third round 3 years from now? Who knows? At least they have their first rounders the next 3 years. And from where we are right now, I want to use them if they can figure out how to use them properly, right? We keep drafting just failures at wing or D that doesn't get to where we want them to. And we're talking about guys, Lauri, who's, you know, I will let you acquiesce about him shortly because I do agree with you long-term. I think he's a solid defenseman. But everyone just seems like there's a but. Brandon Carlo is great, but he gets hurt a lot. Charlie McAvoy is awesome, but he doesn't quite give you everything. There's always that but there on these D guys, and we just spend draft capital on him year over year.
Yeah, you know, I know we talked just earlier before we went live. Lauri, young guy. I know I pumped his tires big time in the playoffs. And I mean, I'm looking at his points, 39 games. You know, he's got 17 points. He's minus 16. You know, he's not your true defensive defenseman. You know, he definitely has that offensive spark and you don't want to take that away from him. But, you know, pair him with someone who is going to be that stay at home. That, you know, like, I don't know. It's, again, I'm not going to get too fired up about it right now on January 11th. We'll see once once the teams get closer together as far as how many games played and see where it sits. But they just squeaked out a W today in the afternoon game. But they let Florida score with 2.6 seconds left. Instead of getting, you know, the 2 points the easy way and keeping Florida off the board, they let them score with 2.6 seconds left to tie the game. A point or 2 points is better than no points. But when you're playing interdivision, if you can keep them to zero, that's always going to be in your best interest.
Sharing point, 3 point games in the division when you're chasing is why it's harder to catch the teams in front of you. That's 100% factual. And by the way, what am I paying you for if you're not going to get fired up about it at this point of the season? That's what we're here for, Kev. We're here
for the fire. Yeah. Well, that's it. It's an afternoon matinee. You know, I'm pretty chill right now.
Beautiful. Yeah. Talk to me when the wine starts flowing a little
later.
That's
it. Yeah.
Yeah. But when you compare the Bruins to the Lightning, right? And we got lucky. We got to see a bunch of our hockey friends, a reunion of sorts a few days ago. I'm sorry, at least I did. You were absent. I keep forgetting you were not there. You were absent from this gathering. I got to see a lot of our friends and get some good conversation around the NHL and the Lightning. And so for them in our conversation, I do want to touch on the Lightning and how they are playing down here in Tampa, because they struggled. They're struggling. They don't look like the same Lightning, right? They're not that same explosive. Kucherov just doesn't. I mean, he's Kucherov, but he doesn't look like he's Kucherov of a couple of years ago. And Jake Etzel, man, he does add something on that line. Like, you watch him out there. He's just always in the right area, always knows where the puck is, always knows how to get his stick on it. But you look at their numbers, and they have less games played by, what do we say, six, right? So their numbers are going to be, in some cases, potentially five goals less than where they will be when they match the numbers of the Bruins. But they already have two 20-goal scorers. Braden Point's at 25, Jay Getzel's at 21, Hegel's at 19, and Kucherov's at 17, and Sorelli, of all people, is at 16. And I say that of all people because I don't think of him as a high-flying scorer. I know he can be, but I think of him as more of that lunch pail, hard hat mentality guy that can put the puck in the net. But, I mean, he gives you, let's see, last year he was a 20, gave you 20 goals, you know, 11 the year before. So, yeah, I was right. He's not the big scorer. So he's got big numbers early this season. But they, and Vassie's shown up and looks like he's Vassie again after some struggles. And I think when it's all said and done, they're going to be fighting Florida for the two spot in the division, fighting and making this division closer and closer in the Atlantic. I think Tampa's got the package to go on a deep run again this year.
Well, when you got Vassie in the pipes, you always have a chance. I also like Tampa's defense, right? Like they've got some good hard nosed defensemen back there. You know, they've also won. They know how to win. And good teams know how to win, specifically when they're not playing their best. Yeah, you want to be playing at, you know, your A level all the time, but that's not manageable. You know, you want to hit your stride when it truly counts. And, you know, the fact that they've got six games in hand on the Bruins, not to beat a dead horse, but, you know, that's 12 points. You know, they win four of those, at least they're ahead, and, you know, they're going to be looking good. So never count Tampa out.
Kev, I'm gonna put you on the spot here. If I were to ask you on the Lightning, who leads the team in plus minus, who would you say?
I would have said probably Hedman, if anyone.
Okay.
Yeah.
So solid D-man, right? Whatever. That's wrong guy, right position. So it's Ryan McDonagh, plus 19. Okay, on your D for your plus minus, okay, plus 19. Then you have Sorelli. Moser is fourth, another D. Saranac is sixth, another defenseman. Victor Hedman is eighth, another defenseman, followed by Dan Radish, Perbix. Basically, your D core is all within the top 10, more or less, right? Which makes sense. I pulled up the same sheet with the Bruins. Zadorov is number two, and McAvoy is number four. But Kev, do you know how many players, not who, how many total players the Bruins have that are plus on their roster right now?
It's got to be two or three when you are
five.
That.
It's five.
Okay. Okay.
You know, five. And number five is plus one. And Charlie McAvoy, plus two. So it's not like these guys. Cole Koepke.
How many games has Koepke played? One game and he was there.
42. Oh, 42, wow. 7-5 for 12. So Cole Koepke, plus nine, leads your 2024-2025 Boston Bruins at plus minus. Wow. Line the duck boats up, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to be in the Charles
That's
come
it.
Playoff time with that record. Like, when you compare that to just We'll talk again in March about this, and the Bruins will be in eighth in the East, looking up 100%.
Or ninth.
Yeah, market or ninth, exactly. For sure. There's a lot to continue to talk about before we get off the NHL. I know we did talk to Trevor over Christmas break. Your brother Trevor, Calgary Flames fan, he's pretty happy with some of the goings ons. Chris did comment on one of our posts that we put up that he's not loving life as a Sabres fan. However, they have strung a couple wins together, at least put a couple wins together recently after their big skid. What other final thoughts kind of as we get into the second half of the NHL season, Kev?
What's funny about that with my brother being down, we were watching, I forget what game ended, and you know, we flipped on the Sabres and Colorado Avalanche. I think there's 3 minutes left. Sabres were up 5-3, and no joke, Colorado ties it and wins it in overtime, and it was just like, wah, wah, wah. Again, though, they're 37 points. 44 is where you need to be. Definitely not out of it. Calgary's battling for a wild card as well. You know, it's anyone's game. I'm shocked to see Washington doing as well as what they are, honestly. You know, Carolina, I always thought, was going to be a tough out there. The Devils, I think they had an off year last year. If you think 2 years ago, they were the belle of the ball, right? Cinderella beats, you know, they beat the Rangers. They went on a run there. That's a good young core. You've got the Leafs' old coach, you know, taking over the reins there. He's a good coach. He's not in a fishbowl that Toronto is. Who knows? Take a snapshot of it right now, and you see come end of March, early April, what that looks like. You know, I know my old man is happy. The Leafs are playing well. I'm a big Craig Berube fan, their coach. I am a huge Berube fan. He's got them playing 200 feet, you know, playing defense, playing hard-nosed. And both their goalies have been playing well there, too. So, you know, in the East, that's my take. The West, I don't get to see them nearly as much, but not surprised to see Vegas near the top of the ranks there. Shocking that the Kings are up there. I know they had a bit of an off year last year too, but you know, they've got quite a bit of games in hand as well. Looking at it, they've only played 39 as of right now, so halfway there, man, halfway there. And it's anyone's ball game.
Absolutely,
that's my take. NHL.
No, absolutely. And a little piece of fun news to discuss before we transition out of the NHL and go over into World Junior space. But the NHL made a pretty major announcement just a few days ago after the 2025 Winter Classic regarding the 2026 Winter Classic and subsequent Stadium Series game. And as everyone in Florida has heard by now, and based on the news, I'm sure everyone in the hockey world has heard by now, the Florida Panthers will host the New York Rangers in Miami on New Year's Eve, just like this year's game, in the Winter Classic. When I saw that announcement first, because that was the first one they came out with, either half a day early or a day early, I was shocked that it wasn't a Battle of Florida, that they didn't put both teams and kind of check the box for both Florida franchises to play that outdoor game, right? I was shocked that I was like, New York, Florida, like, the Bruins in Florida have a better rivalry. I'm shocked that the Rangers were chosen to play in Florida, right? That was shocking. I heard a little more detail, read more about it. You know, it's a dome stadium. They're going to keep the roof closed and climate controlled until basically game day, game time, and then hopefully be able to open the roof and play that outdoor style game, right? Pending weather and all that. So, like, great. And then the next day, the other shoe drops. Whereas on February 1st, Raymond James Stadium Series game,
yep.
Lightning Bruins. And that was the one that I was like, okay, that one makes sense. Like, now that explains why Tampa's not at the Winter Classic. That explains why New York is at the Winter Classic with Florida. Jeff Vinnick, the former owner of the Tampa Bay Lightning, had pined for years about an outdoor game in Tampa, swore that they could do it, swore they could figure it out. And their system is going to be pretty interesting. They're going to put it at Raymond James. They're going to build a complete climate controlled structure over the ice for the duration of pre-setup, ice freeze, all the pre-game stuff, practices and all that, and then take it down day of to play outside. I'm guessing that's going to be a, you know, 8 o'clock start, right? As nighttime as they can get it to play that outdoor. Kev, I don't know how they're going to pull it off, but I really hope they do, because I'm going to be there on February 1st and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, no, we're both going to be there for sure. But I've said it for years. I mean, hey, it does get cold down here, specifically in the Tampa Bay area, not as much as the Miami area. So I was shocked more so to hearing about the Panthers getting an outdoor game. But, you know, you look at the way the weather has been the past couple weeks here, it's, you know, they don't need special chillers. Ice would have kept, you know. So, you know, it's always January could be a crapshoot down here. It can, you know, 50 degrees down here is a lot colder than what 50 degrees up north is. So, you know, I'm excited. I think it's awesome for the game of hockey. I'm sure there's, you know, the people that have since left the game and left this earth are probably rolling, wondering what the heck, how is Florida going to host an outdoor game? I think it's going to be awesome. You know, Tampa has always been top notch. I love the fact that they're playing the Bruins. I would have thought it would have been maybe the interstate rivalry there, but I think the Bruins fans obviously travel well. Hockey here in Tampa Bay has grown significantly. This is only going to help the game grow that much more. And I'm excited to see how it all turns out. Yeah, no, I think it's going to be phenomenal. Can't wait to see when tickets come out because we'll be definitely purchasing.
Absolutely. It'll be a great experience. I know there were some issues. I want to say a few years ago when they were in Dallas, they had a tough time with the sun that actually delayed the game. They were supposed to start, you know, it was supposed to be a 1 or 2 o'clock start. They had to delay till the sun went down because it was too bright. So it was making the ice sloppy. So I know they've have challenges in the past. I do not doubt technology has gotten better. Their understanding of how to make ice, you know, mobily in warmer temperatures. I mean, it was raining at this year's Winter Classic. Yeah. And they were playing. And typically the rain has shut down those games too. Yeah. So they've clearly figured it out a little bit. So I don't doubt they can, and they have the money to do it. Let's be honest, right? They have the money to spend. I think it'll work. What about this angle, Kev? And I know we're getting long on this topic, but this is the angle that I'm more concerned about. We've all been in rinks coaching with the kids where the rink is like 5 degrees warmer than it should be.
Yeah.
And you are out there in t-shirts. The kids are taking their jerseys off. It is absolute just melt fest. If it's 70 degrees outside, the ice may be perfect because they built the thing and it's all good and whatever, but they're in 30 pounds of gear with those sweaters on, you know, there's high sock. Like it's not, they're not there in basketball. It's not Larry Bird running around. Like, are we worried about the players in that aspect?
You know, I mean, I never thought of that. Right. I think, you know, they will make sure it's good for the players, plain and simple. I think if I'm a player and I have an opportunity to be a part of history, that's going to be the least of our, you know, of my worry. If I were a player, it all comes down really as long as the ice conditions are good. That's the big thing. I mean, players have had to deal with, you know, temperatures like that. When you look back into the 80s, you know, the old Boston Garden, right? And teams that live in warmer climates or, you know, you go longer into the playoffs to the finals, usually there's going to be some stressors that take place. You know, 88, I remember literally the fog, right? Canceling the game against Edmonton.
But hey, bud, Nikita Kucherov is not Mike Milbury, 1986, right? In the Boston Garden.
I know.
Little different athlete there, bud.
100%. But, you know, again, the biggest concern will be just the ice. If the ice conditions are not good and they don't feel safe, then obviously they're not going to do it. And I think the game that you're referencing actually was Lake Tahoe. That was in Tahoe, right off the lake. Bruins played Philly. And I know, I think they might have had 1 or 2 games there. But, yeah, the sun definitely was baking the ice a little bit more on one end than the other. They'll figure it out. You know, I mean, I just want to be entertained.
And I think that part will happen no matter what, just because of the visual. I can see it now. ABC or TBS or MOR or whoever's got the game nowadays is going to take their helicopter and they're going to fly up to 10,000 feet and pan out. And there's going to be Raymond James Stadium with Tampa Bay and Clearwater Beach off in the distance. And it's going to be a sight that no one's ever seen before. And that's what the NHL is banking on. Right. And they're going to talk about a destination. I know the Minnesotians and the Canadians are crying about how dare you put a game down there, except they're all going to be here. They're all going to fly down and take their nice little Christmas, their little winter vacation and spend their money down here and go see the game and sit outside in shorts and a t-shirt and think it's absolutely awesome to watch hockey this way. Right. Yep. So it is going to, the entertainment value, check the box. A once in a lifetime experience, check the box. And at the end of the day, it's entertainment. So like you said, if it's safe for the players, let's go play hockey.
Yeah. I mean, when they did it in Anaheim or LA, you know, a few years ago, right then and there, I'm like, it's going to come to Tampa, at least Tampa. Again, was shocked about the Miami because, you know, we know when we go down there, it's 15 degrees warmer a lot of the time. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that gets pulled out. But no, a year from now, I'm pumped. It's going to be awesome for the community, for hockey. And, you know, people will get to see what Tampa Bay is all about.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Kev, with that, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's touch on the World Juniors 2025 next in the Nest. Welcome back, everybody. Kev, we just watched the last, basically that week between Christmas and New Year's. Great junior tournament. The World Juniors took place in Ottawa. They split it up between the home of the Sens and the home of the 67s up there in Ottawa. Rabid fan base, to say the least. Some players heard it more than others. Some refs heard it more than others. USA Hockey comes out with their back-to-back gold medals. Canada gets knocked out, what many would consider earlier than they should have. I will say that Czech team is for real and people don't take them seriously enough, and I think that's part of the problem. But overall, what was your take on the 2025 World Juniors?
Well, I mean, being Canadian, right, that is heart and soul. I know that nation was gutted with not getting a chance to play in the medal. That's 2 years in a row that the Czechs have knocked out Canada in the quarterfinals. I think the biggest thing is how big hockey has grown throughout the globe. USA Hockey, being down here, seeing our kids, you know, I've got an 18-year-old now, and, you know, just seeing how the game and the skill has progressed and how much the kids love the game. You know, Canada's competing against a lot of other nations right now. And in that Czech game, I think my takeaway was, you know, they played a good game. They tied it up. It was gutsy discipline. They were undisciplined in a lot of the games that I saw. And, you know, it's one thing if it's a call here or there, but, you know, how many times do you have to put your hand on the stove and realize that, you know, you can't put yourself in front of the team. And I know, you know, you're playing in front of the home crowd and you're amped up and ready to go, but there were just some silly, silly late penalties. And, you know, just I'm going to say their enthusiasm or, you know, it just got bigger than, you know, keeping their head level. And easier said than done when you're sitting, you know, 1,000 miles away watching it on television. But, you know, for the Canadians, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. I think those games were so close. When you look at the final four or, you know, six that were there, it's good to see the parity in the world of hockey. But yeah, USA Hockey, it's why I'm wearing the hat right now. You know, they're top of the table for another year, and, you know, looking forward to seeing what next year brings.
Yeah. So do you put any stock in, I'll use the term this way, and I don't mean any disrespect by it, but do you buy any of the stock in the crying of the Canadian fans, especially with the referee, and they were singled out or it was unfair or they were treated any differently or anything like that?
No, not at all. I mean, in fact, my brother was down here, and when we were watching it together, it's like, you know, there were some of those 5-minute majors. They were 5-minute majors. I mean, it was just silly. They got too amped up. You know, I can't, those kids want to win. Right. And you get momentum or, you know, I lost for words, bud, but no, I don't. The crying of the officiating. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
The only reason I ask is because I don't ever take stock in it. We always coach that yes, calls will go against you in a game and calls will be made incorrectly. There will be wrong calls in a game. There will be games where a call is made because the ref sees it from a certain angle or sees something from where he is. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what it is.
Yep.
You know, like, I know at that level, there's two refs. They are still only looking at what they look at. The game is fast. They're all over the ice. So they look for the tendencies that usually lead to penalties. It's no different than a goalie looking at a shooter through a screen at the blue line. And all he sees is the shooter's stick move. And he moves his glove to make a save. And the puck hits him in the glove. He never saw the puck till it was in his glove.
Yeah.
Well, how do you make the save? He played the odds of that play. Sometimes the refs do the same thing. When you're chasing a guy down and you go horizontal with your stick around the guy's waist, 95% of the time, that's hooking. So they're going to call it almost every time, right? Yeah. They're playing the odds of the penalty sometimes, right? So, and not to mention, let's talk about the speed of the game. I made the comment before about Kucherov and Mike Milbury being not the same athlete. These juniors kids, these 20 U20 kids, Gavin McKenna is the best player on the face of the earth, and he's not even draft eligible for two more seasons. Like, this kid is out of control good. And you're supposed to have some ref that, you know, and I'm not knocking the refs. They do a great job for what they are, who they are, their experience, and what they're given. But there's no Gavin McKenna referee out there chasing this kid around, making sure that every time he's slashed or hooked, they call it and all that. So you've got to let the reffing go. And, okay, you don't like the kneeing penalty? Great. It's a 5 minute and you lost one guy. And unless he's your Nikita Kucherov, which he wasn't, he's a solid player. You don't lose the game because of that penalty in the first period.
No. And you know what? The last penalty, right? You look at it, it was one Mississippi, two Mississippi, and I'm mm-hmm. still going to go in and clean them. The game, the officiating was the same all the way through, you know, and that, as a team, you have to look at yourself and say, we can't play this style. You have to adapt to how the game is being called. You can't, you know, you're not going to force the hand of the referees. If they're calling Correct. It the way they're calling it, you've got to, you got to identify that and realize that. And, you know, in Canada's quarterfinal game against Czech, that was the nail in the coffin. They tie it up. The barn is going absolutely insane. You as a coach, you got to tell your team nothing stupid. Let's stay out of the box because right. the Czech, you know, game winning goal was that power play goal, you know, plain and simple. But don't put yourself in a situation when you can control it. You don't have to follow through with that. And, you know, they're lucky they didn't call a 5 minute on that one because it was similar to the 5 minute that was called earlier in the game. I mean, that to me is, again, you have to just, you got to take that fire and use it in the right way. And, you know, again, it would have been nice to see if they could have continued 5-on-5 because they were dominating. Let's be real. In that game, if Canada would have came out the way they played, you know, the second half of that game, it would have been, you know, the score would have been the other way, maybe even a little bit more lopsided. But, well, you know,
when you let a good team hang around
yeah.
and you're out playing a good team, what usually happens? That's usually what happens, right? They get yeah. their confidence, they get their legs under them and they end up at least making it harder on you or in this case, right, beating you. And I do want to point out, too, IIHF, this came up a couple of years ago, IIHF rules are slightly different than what we would consider the North American game rules, right? I know these kids are playing, most of them are major juniors or NCAA. And this all came up. Remember the goalie interference controversy of either last year or the year before and how the goal – and I forget the specifics, right? But I do remember listening to others on the radio and on different podcasts talk about it, how – in the IIHF, the rule is either very clear or very clear the other way, right? Whatever way it went.
Yeah.
Whereas in the NHL game, it probably would have, you know, whatever, been the goal if they called it off or would have got called off if it was allowed, right? Whatever the situation. But so to your point, you can't take the 3 second run at the guy after the puck is gone in the IIHF game. They're going to call that every single time.
Yep.
That's not the game they play at that in that jurisdictional body. And some of these kids and maybe the Canadians had the little bit dialed up for that tournament, playing at home after last year. There was some talk about they didn't take the right kids, or they didn't take the kid, you know, all the kids that should have been on that team weren't taken because the coach, whatever. I don't want to get into the rumor mill, but that's been reported. Go find it all over for the internet. Maybe they had a hair across their ass and wanted to go prove that they could do what they could do. And that was the game they ended up playing. I don't know. You know, I'm not as familiar with the Canadian history at that tournament other than they seem to be snake bitten right now. And they may be in need of an overhaul for next year.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. USA Hockey, right? Mm-hmm. You look at how USA Hockey changed their whole model 8-9 years ago. And now you're seeing the fruits of their labor as to what these kids grew up with, like small area games, more touches, cross ice at an early age. You know, the skill level of all of these kids are unreal. I just, looking at Canada, I didn't see that one player that, you didn't have Bedard, you didn't have McDavid, like the one that you can really hang your hat on and, you know, that's the person that's going to get the game winner. It was more of a, you know, hey, by committee, right? Like four lines, four deep. They're 18, you know, 15 to 20 years old. You know, all those kids want to win. All those kids are skilled. You know, I think discipline is what really bit them, though, because they had a lot of penalties. You know, when they played the U.S., there was a 5-minute major. I don't know if it was near the end of the second period where, you know, the U.S. player dumped it in. And I think it was like four Mississippis, and, you know, the Canadian kid buried him from behind. It was just a bad. You just don't do that. And, you know, your momentum and energy and you're full of piss and vinegar, that can get the best of you. But as we've had Coach Chris Goodman on, the mental piece, that is such a big thing. You don't let the moment get bigger than yourself, or yourself get bigger than the moment. You know, it's a team game. It's got to be we, not me. And, you know, if someone wronged you, that's not the time to get that person back. These kids have played against each other in different leagues, and they're going to continue to play. If you want to, if you feel you've been wronged by them, be an elephant and get them back some other time.
Well, and I mean, to your point, I looked it up as you were talking, because you made me think of the penalty minutes, right? And they do keep. Thank you for keeping stats, internet. Canada led all teams, which I don't think this is surprising, but when you hear these numbers, they will be. So they played five games. They led all teams in penalty minutes with 113. Czechia had 91 in second place. And then, I mean, the U.S. had 60. So they nearly doubled the United States in penalty minutes. Sweden had 50. Finland had 75, right? So there's two out of your top three. And then Czechia was number three, and they had the second most. So Czechia is the outlier. Go ahead.
And I think Sweden and U.S. have that much because I think there was a fight at the end between the two. So I think those two that was the one game right there where, you know, tempers got the best of both teams. And, you know, so cross that game out.
Well, yeah, but even worse, they break it down. The IAHF breaks this down awesomely well. So Canada had 34 minors, right? Minor is a two-minute penalty. Canada had 34 of them. The United States had 30. Okay, fairly even, right? Canada had 1-5, that's the kneeing major.
Yep.
Canada had 2-10s, and that always skews the numbers because those count as penalties when you get the misconduct. But they had two 10-minutes. No one else in the tournament had one.
Yeah.
Canada's the only team that had a 10-minute assigned to them. They had two of them. And then Canada had one game misconduct, so did Czechia, Kazakhstan, and Finland. But break it all down. Penalty average per game, Canada, 22-36. That's a period. You're playing a period on average being a man short.
Yeah. I mean,
you can't win hockey games that way.
No. And again, you know, I'm going to peel it back. That's coaching. You know, anytime, any team that, you know, I was a part of the coaching staff, you know, it stems from the top, right? And the game has changed. You have to understand, you know, how the game's being called. The whole North South, let's beat them to a pulp to win. If a game's being called that way, then you got to be a chameleon and adapt that way. You know, the games that I saw, specifically the Canadian games, it's like they just continue to put their hand on the stove. It's, you know, it's a definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing, expecting a different result. And, you know, they're too good and too skilled to not understand that. But I will have to say that's got to be on the coaching. Because if someone is not following what the message is, then you sit them, you know, you don't let them play. Like that's how, do I have your attention now? Right.
Correct. Well, and you look at the way the U.S. game has completely changed. The U.S. team, that was, I won't say the most skilled team, but I'll say it in a way of, they played the most skilled hockey as a unit. They still would hit you in the corner, and they would still not back down in front of the net, and they would still give you the extra, you know, cross check or punch in the face if that was called for in that moment. But they didn't play their game that way. They didn't go on the ice trying to beat you up. They literally went on the ice and outplayed you. And some of their passing and the way they moved the puck and the way they got to the open ice and rotated as a five-man unit was some of the most skillful hockey I've seen out of a U.S. team in a while. And I'm wondering, and I want to tie this to the model. So, like, these are the kids that have spent their entire youth career in the new model. And this, that's like you said, the small area games, the multiple touches, the soccer on the ice when you're a mite and all that stuff, right? Cross ice hockey, the start and yada, yada, yada. And now they're playing this way. I'm going to tie this all together. We're then going to go to the Four Nations in February and play US, Canada, Sweden, Finland with the NHL guys. And I'm going to go on a limb and say Canada's going to beat the bag out of the US at the Four Nations because they literally roll out, like, not even all-star team, like an all-century team in that roster. Crosby, McDavid, Marchand, you know, just keep going down the list of top-end Canadian players that are going to be out there. Is moving forward, does Canada have a bigger issue or problem on their hands that the US is going to turn into what, you know, that powerhouse at the, call it the Four Nations Olympic level, in because the Olympics are right around the corner, and some of your Canadian stalwarts are aging out, right? The Patrice Bergerons of the world, Sidney Crosby, McDavid's not, right? He'll be around. But just the bigger picture, Kevin, how is this all tying together? And is the U.S. primed to make a run at the top level of international hockey?
I think they're absolutely primed. And I think if you look at it starts from the back end out, you know, this Four Nations, it's going to be interesting to see because the U.S. is so deep in goaltending where that could be Canada's, you know, Achilles heel. They definitely are deep in the forwards and the D, but like you can't count out the U.S. Like the skill level that has been developed is unbelievable, you know. And you know, it's a shame because there's only four teams in. The Czechs, I think, got hosed. They should be in this thing. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that they should be in this thing. So, you know, I think the U.S. has an absolute opportunity to win this thing. There's a chance Canada could come fourth. You know, the Finns and the Swedes are the Finns and the Swedes. I mean, they've been dynamic, right? And I'm interested to see how it all shakes out. I know my brother and I were talking about it, and the goaltending to me is going to be the biggest question mark going into it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have Luongo you don't have Luongo anymore. You don't have Carey Price. You don't have Brodeur. You know,
the goaltending absolutely falls in the U.S. favor. I think out of all four teams, the U.S. is the deepest in goaltending. I think for the next 5 years, U.S. goaltending is the top of the top of the pile.
Unless sure. Russia is allowed back in eventually, because, I mean, you know, they're so deep there. But
hey, in a couple more years from now, there's going to be another team that's going to want a seat at the table. One team, Team Latvia. And I am not an expert in Latvian hockey. But let me tell you something, a bunch of teenage men, right, 15 to 20 year olds, and I think most of that team was your 18 to 20 year old. They were the older age group. I mean, first of all, they're goaltender, and I wasn't prepared to talk Latvian hockey, so I don't have his name in front of me. I put a post about him during the tournament. He played out of his mind. Let's be real. He kept them in the game against Canada to give them a chance to win. He kept them in a lot of games that Latvia was just, I mean, 50 shots to 12, right? Like, I mean, that your goaltender's standing on his head. But the way they play the game, the way they don't quit, they don't give up, like, they're coming big time, and they're fun to watch. It's fun to watch a nation that loves hockey. I mean, hockey is the national sport of Latvia. That is where they put all of their resources and their effort and their attention. And they are showing up on the international stage, and they are in the conversation to be a top eight, top 10 team. Maybe not in the rankings, right? Maybe not. But when you look at these tournaments, they're going to be there at the end fighting for that either playoff spot or that quarterfinal spot or whatever. I'm really excited to see what this showing this year, plus hopefully they can build on it. What do they look like in 5 years from now, right? And are they at the table in a Olympics 2038 or whatever the year is, right? Like, are they on the come that close, or was that a flash in the pan?
Well, I mean, they didn't get relegated, right? That's the most important thing. They're going to have another seat at the table next year. And hopefully that will continue to just build on how they are as a nation. But yeah, you're right. I mean, they played goaltending, right? In the Canada game, that kid stood on his head. He stole the game. Big time. But you look at the other games that they played, you know, they played Finland tight. They played that, you know, it was a 5-1 game against the US. you would think that should be a 10-1 game when you're comparing skill level, right? So yeah, I know I took a lot of heat down here from friends and not family about the Canucks losing that game, but you know, we'll see. What was interesting is Germany. I think Germany has sort of fallen off the table a little bit. I think they're the ones that ended up getting relegated. So I'm not sure who takes their spot next year. But that's the beauty of junior and kids sports, right? I still call them kids, even though some of them are men. But no, they all want to win. They all want to represent. They all wear their hearts on their sleeves. The skill level is through the roof. I love the parody of how, you know, the juniors is it could be anywhere between, you know, 1 to 6 teams that could win that thing. So Canada's got a lot of work to do. There's got to be a lot of soul searching that goes on. It's a passionate, passionate country about their game of hockey. And I know that they'll bounce back and, you know, it'll be interesting to see with the Four Nations Cup if Canada doesn't have a huge chip on their shoulder to try and pick up the young guys that unfortunately weren't able to medal in the juniors this year.
Absolutely. And I'm going to butcher this, but Latvia, the goalie's name in the 53 save performance, 8 rounds of the shootout, Leonards Fjeldbergs. And I'm sure I butchered the crap out of that, but I tried my best. But that is him. That is the man of the tournament for sure. And absolutely kept them in. Like you said, other games were close and he was the reason why. They were outshot massively and he played really well all tournament long.
Yep. Yep. Is he drafted by anyone? Do we know? Or
that is a great question. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that question.
Yeah. Well,
but if not, I'm sure he's on somebody's radar nowadays after that play. But
Boston could use the backup. Although, yeah, absolutely. You know, Boston's backup is doing better than Swayman right now.
He is eligible for the 2025 draft. Well, so he's draft eligible in 2025 and will most likely be picked up by somebody to get a shot in someone's organization moving forward. So one more conversation on juniors, Kev, before we wrap up our show. We'd be remiss since we both lived here and spent far too much time, effort, and money at the local drinking establishment within the confines of Wesley Chapel over the weekend, not to talk about the USPHL Premier Tampa Showcase. I'm sorry, the USPHL Tampa Showcase Premier and Elite Division. They also did a really cool thing where they had some NCAA D3 teams in the building playing a little smaller micro tournament. You could kind of go in, catch some of their games, see their coaches walking around. That definitely added to the level of awareness. There was more coaches and scouts and eyes in that building from the D3 level because of that, plus the normal amount of scouting. The scout room was full. I would look up in between some of the B rink and the C rink. They had a room reserved for the scouts, and the chairs were full every time I was in there looking up. So well-scouted tournament, it appears. Really good hockey, a lot of good surprises. The Dells Ducks went 2-2. That's obviously my son's team. Kev, TBJ, they go undefeated over the weekend, or did they have a hiccup?
They lost their last one in a shootout against the Hurricanes. It was a 1-1. The boys, they tied it with 30-something seconds left. 3-on-3, 5 minutes, nothing happened, and came down to a shootout. But no, my son's team, they looked really good. They looked poised. I think that, you know, that last loss, definitely that's going to be a motivator for the rest of the year. But, you know, more importantly, I was just impressed with how good the hockey was. A lot of the games were pretty tight. I know there was some lopsided ones here and there, but for the most part, the games that I watched, they were close and tight and hard fought. And it was fun to see. And it was fun to see the schools that were there as well. And I'd be remiss not to say just before Christmas in Estero, the Blades put on a showcase as well. And there were a number of schools that were there also. And, you know, it was great because I know for a fact, specifically speaking to, you know, my son's team, that some of the kids were approached and spoken to by some of the scouts there from the different schools. So, you know, in this being, you know, the third year that we've been a part of it, I know we saw a little bit of that last year. What was nice is your son plays Premier. You know, my son plays Elite. Usually the scouts were more focused on just the Premier kids. And, you know, seeing from an Elite standpoint, people were approached at the Elite level. So, you know, it was good just to see that, you know, kids are getting looks, whether it's high club or not. They were there. So it was fun.
Absolutely. It was. It was. And I think the hockey, you know, the hockey got, you said a lot of games were close and they were, and the hockey was good. Some of the teams started, you know, the Friday game or the Saturday morning game. Some of those teams, some of those games were the team's first games after a Christmas break. Some of those hadn't played in some teams hadn't played in a week. Some teams hadn't played in two or three. Yeah. So there was a couple different levels of readiness for some of those early games, and some of the scores and performances showed that out. But the middle of the weekend, the bread and butter, really good games. And we saw some surprises, you know, on the elite side. The standings going in showed Wilkes-Barre Scranton, the Knights out of Pennsylvania, number one, your son's Tampa Bay Juniors, number two. And we leave the weekend and your son's Tampa Bay Juniors is number one on the rankings, and WBS falls to number two. And I watched a couple of the WBS games, and people move, you know, kids move and get called up, and that's the point of the USPHL, and that's great. But, you know, I watched a game with our former guest, Cooper Christensen from the Florida Junior Blades. They had a great weekend. They went 3-1, and yep. He had said that they were right on the edge. All they needed was to put it together and do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And man, they were doing this and that and then some over the weekend. And really, that game against WBS, that was a statement win for them. I think they won 5-1, if my memory serves, and played well, hard-fought game, and just really fun to watch. And again, like we said a million times, any given Sunday, right? Anybody can win at any time. And I think this weekend showed that. There was some upsets, some expecteds, and a whole lot of fun in between.
Yeah, if you don't show up, I mean, you see it all the time, right? You can't go into a game thinking that other team's going to lay down and, you know, let them rub your belly. Like, and not to say that that happened with Wilkes-Barre, but like they are having a very successful season and coming down and playing a lot of the Florida division teams. I think teams in the North sometimes think that it's going to be a cakewalk playing some of the teams that are down here in Florida. And it's just not, that's not the case. I mean, yeah, we've got a lot of Florida kids that are playing in the Florida League, but yeah, there's kids from all over different countries that, that come here and play. And, you know, if you're not ready, if you don't strap it on and ready to go, you know, you can have two or three behind you real quick and, you know, you're behind the eight ball. So that's the biggest thing. What I love about these showcases is you get to see other teams from other divisions within your league and how you stack up against them. And just because someone might be at the bottom of their division doesn't mean that they can blow the doors off you, because that division might be extremely well balanced and, you know, they're just at the bottom end of it. So you could tell the first games, Christmas legs, New Year's legs were definitely there. But as the weekend went on and as the game, you know, even their first game went on, you started to see the crispness and the skill. And, you know, there was some heavy hits there, too. It was fun to watch. Fun to watch.
Absolutely. And the staff at Top Shelf was top notch over the weekend, taking care of us with the libations and the food. And we've said it a million times, and I will continue to promote them if you are in Wesley Chapel at that rink. And it's funny, I heard some out-of-town parents. You could tell they're out-of-town parents just by the way they were talking about how it's the nicest restaurant bar they've seen in a rink. And one of them was convincing another one to order food. And they're like, no, we'll go somewhere else. We'll go to a real restaurant. And he was like, this is a real restaurant. Get the food. Yep. Eat here. Don't worry about leaving. It is that type of place. And we spent plenty of time there, and it worked out great because my son's game was on the rink where you could sit in the bar at the glass and literally look over onto the ice, and you can't hear it. So it's sterile, but yep. You can see everything. And it was very cold. It was a very cold weekend in the rink and in the Tampa area. So there was a nice opportunity for people to sit upstairs, stay warm, eat, drink, watch the game, and have a place to kind of set themselves up. So worked out really well. Had a good time. Watched a lot of good hockey, Kev. And it was a good jumping off point now for what is really the push. There's 6 weeks of hockey left, give or take, till playoffs start. And the push is on for a lot of divisions and a lot of teams.
Yeah, no, this is where the rubber hits the road, right? It's they're past the halfway point, and you know, every game counts, specifically with how the playoff structure, at least I know it's changed down here in Florida and at the elite level, where, you know, you have to get into the dance first and foremost. But just because you are in the final game in the playoffs, and that's, we can talk about that as it gets closer, every point matters because there's wild cards now, and that's wild cards throughout the whole league. So don't take your foot off the gas. Keep it rolling. Interesting to see how it all shakes out when it gets close to that playoff time.
And one more, you're 100% right. And it's going to be an interesting push because more teams maybe make it from the divisional level, but it's a much more difficult path to make it to the national dance. And a lot of teams are going to be fighting for that. And one of those teams that is fighting for that on the premier side is the Florida Eels. And the reason I bring them up is because our good buddy and former Greasy Pigeon guest, Yorgos Baikakis from the Florida Eels, number 22, G, as we say. He got promoted this year. You know, the USPHL talks about advancement in action, right? And he's one of those kids that advanced this season. During the season, he went back to the Eels after a successful campaign last year on their elite team and showed them something. And Kev, you and I know exactly what he showed them. Grit, determination, positive attitude, willingness to do the hard work, all of the things. And got promoted to Premier, and he packed his bag for the weekend, Kev, and they sent the U-Haul to load the rest of his stuff because he hasn't looked back. 27 games now, 17 points. Kev, 4 game-winning goals at the Premier level, including one the first game of their weekend against the vaunted Metro Jets Premier team, which the Metro Jets Premier team is looked at as one of the premier organizations in all the USPHL. Gritty game, hard game, came to the wire. But G put that puck in the net. I saw the dad afterwards, Coach Gus, and he was happy. And I didn't get a chance to see G and congratulate him personally. But just another amazing performance by a kid that you coach, that we know, that has put the work in and done it the right way. So just kudos to G and the rest of his teammates down there in Estero.
Yeah, no doubt. Big G fan, heart and soul. He's the classic player that you hate playing against him, but you love having him on your team, and extremely proud of him. He's come a long way, well-deserved. And, you know, he is the spark plug that Premier team definitely needs. He's not afraid to go in the dirty areas. He's not the biggest guy, but he's got the heart of a lion, and, you know, it's fun to see him succeed. And he's always had a knack for the net. You know, it may not be the flashiest or the prettiest, but he finds a way to get the puck in the net and make his teammates better and the team better. So, excited to see how he finishes out the rest of this year as well.
He absolutely is. And before the hate mail starts, the Florida Eels are out of Fort Myers, not out of Estero. That is the Junior Blades, and I do not want to start the war of I-75 because I called the team out of the wrong rank. So the Florida Eels, where Yorgos Baikakis plays, is out of Fort Myers, not out of Estero, so please don't send the hate mail. Before I let you go, Kev, do you know who the Florida Defensive Player of the Month is for December by chance?
I do. Yeah. And was shocked, really. Not shocked, but, you know, I guess extremely proud. My son is he's been on a pretty good run.
Pretty good run. Carter Trussler has been named Defensive Player of the Month for the Florida Division. He played his 100th career game in December, which we had him on right before that game. He's sitting at 69 career points, 23 this season, 5 goals and 18 assists to be the highest scoring defenseman for his team per the press release on the USPHL. He is that offensive defenseman. He controls the play. He's the leader in the room. He's the leader on the ice. He's doing everything the right way for them. He's helping them out. He's leading their charge. Number one ranked team in the nation, pushing towards playoffs. You can't take anything for granted. You can't look ahead. But him and that team are rowing the boat the right way, and I hope nothing but good things for them as the season comes to an end.
Yeah, you can't get too high, can't get too low. You can't let what you did today affect what you do down the road, right? One game at a time, every game counts. And absolutely. You know, you got to clinch the playoffs. And, you know, once you're in there, we know how that goes. How many eight versus ones have we seen the eight team win? So,
well, if Carter was on the blue line of the Boston Bruins, I'd be worried if he was the one seed going against the eight. But I worry less with him. I worry less with him on the TBJ blue line, buddy.
Now, it's fun to watch, and it's just fun to see. You know, going back to the showcase, we saw a lot of kids that we coached, both coached them or coached against them. And it's just awesome to see, you know, everyone still playing and playing at a high level. So hats off, Florida hockey. You know, it continues to grow. You're going to see more and more kids out of this area. You know, hey, Sully had a hell of a game that we saw him play. You know, that was an overtime thriller. And I believe that might have been on or close to someone's birthday.
The rumor has it might have been on the birthday. Yeah. That's what I heard. It was a nice birthday present from my son, backstopping the team's overtime W. They had to fight hard in that game, and they had a tough weekend. They went 2-2, good results, yeah. But the games were not easy, of course, and a lot of struggle through getting their legs back under them and playing a good team game. And there was flashes of it, and of course they played well enough to get 4 points out of the weekend, including the overtime W on that would have been Sunday afternoon. And my son happened to be in net for that performance. And the Flow announcer, who is the Metro Jets. He's the Metro Jets home announcer, and he named Sully player of the game that day. So 35 saves, I think, in that performance. So well done there. And something good to build on for sure moving forward. And that's what, goalies need confidence and teams need confidence. And much like the juniors, hopefully the Ducks came out of Florida with a pep in their step and, played last night, not the result you want, but they got two more, one tonight, one tomorrow. So go salvage the last two and then reset for the next weekend, right? That's all you can do.
That's it. Yep. One game at a time.
One show at a time for us, buddy. We are off and running in 2025 here in the Pigeon's Nest, buddy. Hey. Welcome back. Glad to be back with you.
Same here, bud. I know it took a little bit. It's good to be back. Looking forward to 2025 and what it brings to everyone. And let's get some good guests here on the Nest.
Absolutely. We will work on guests, content, fun and laughs 2025 in the Nest. Kev, until we talk again, enjoy, have a good time.
You
we'll
too,
see
buddy.
You next time in the Cheers. Nest. Cheers.